and Jesper's father. All of us. No matter who wins the auction, Vanek and Pekka Rollins aren't going to just pack up and go home.
Neither will the shoe.
Kaz rose, leaning on his crow's head cane. But I know one thing this city is more frightened of than the shoe, the Fjerdens, and all the gangs of the barrel put together. And Nina, you're going to give it to them.
26. Kaz. Kaz sat in that chair for what felt like hours, answering their questions, letting the pieces of the plan shift into place. He saw the scheme's final shape in his mind. The steps it would take to get them there. The infinite ways they might falter or be found out. It was a mad, spiky monster of a plan. And that was what it had to be for them to succeed. Johannes Rietveld. He'd told a kind of truth. Johannes Rietveld had never existed. Kaz had used Jordi's middle name and their shared family name to create the farmer's identity years ago. He wasn't certain why he'd purchased the farm where he'd grown up, or why he'd continued to make trades and acquire property under the Rietveld name. Was Johannes Rietveld meant to be his Jacob Hertzsoon? A respectable identity like the one Pekka Rollins had crafted to better dupe gullible pigeons? Or had it been some way of resurrecting the family he'd lost? Didn't even matter. Johannes Rietveld existed on paper and in bank records, and Colm Fahey was perfect to play the role. When the meeting finally broke apart, the coffee had gone cold, and it was nearly noon. Despite the bright light streaming through the windows, they would all try to get a few hours' rest. He could not. We don't stop. Kaz's whole body ached with exhaustion. His leg had ceased throbbing, and now it just radiated pain. He knew how damnably stupid he was being, how unlikely it was that he'd return from the slat. Kaz had spent his life in a series of dodges and feints. Why come at a problem straight on when you could find some other way to approach? There was always an angle, and he was an expert at finding it. Now he was about to go stomping ahead like an ox yoked to a plow. Odds were good he'd end up beaten, bloodied, and dragged through the barrel straight to Pekka Rollins's front stoop. But they'd landed in a trap. And if he had to chew his paw off to get them out of it, then that was what he would do. First he had to find Inej. She was in the suite's lavish white and gold bathroom, seated at a vanity table, cutting fresh bandages from the towels. He strode past her and removed his coat, tossing it onto the sink beside the basin. I need your help plotting a route to the slat. I'm coming with you. You know I have to face them alone, he said. They'll be looking for any sign of weakness, Wraith. He turned the spigots, and after a few creaking groans, steaming water poured from the tap. Maybe when he was rolling in Kruger, he'd have running hot water installed in the slat. But I can't approach at street level. You shouldn't approach at all. He stripped off his gloves and dunked his hands in the water, then splashed it over his face, running his fingers through his hair. Talk me through the best route, or I'll find my own way there. He would have preferred to walk instead of climb. Hell, he'd have preferred to be driven there in a carriage and four. But if he tried to make it through the barrel on the streets, he'd be captured before he got anywhere near the slat. Besides, if he had any chance of making this work, he needed the high ground. He dug in his coat pockets and held up the tourist map of Ketterdam he'd found in the suite's parlor. It didn't have as much detail as he would have liked, but their real maps of the city had been left on Black Veil. They laid the map beside the basin and bent to the task as Inej drew a line through the rooftops, describing the best places to cross the canals. At one point, she tapped the map. This way is faster, but it's steeper. I'll take the long way, said Kaz. He wanted his mind on the fight ahead and avoiding notice, not on the chance he was going to tumble to his death. When he was satisfied he could follow the route from memory, he tucked the map away and took another paper from his pocket. It bore the pale green seal of the Gemmens Bank. He handed it to her. What is this? She asked, her eyes scanning the page. It's not. She ran her fingertips over the words, as if expecting them to vanish. My contract, she whispered. I don't want you beholden to Per Haskell. Or me. Another half-truth. His mind had concocted 100 schemes to bind her to him, to keep her in this city. But she'd spent enough of her life caged by debts and obligations, and it would be better for them both when she was gone.
How?
She said.
The money.
It's done. He'd liquidated every asset he had, used the last of the savings he'd accrued, every ill-gotten cent. She pressed the envelope to her chest above her heart.
I have no words to thank you for this.
Surely the Suli have 1,000 proverbs for such an occasion.
Words have not been invented for such an occasion.
If I end up on the gallows, you can say something nice over the corpse, he said.
Wait until 6 bells.
If I'm not back, try to get everyone out of the city.
Kaz, there's a discolored brick in the wall behind the Crow Club. Behind it you'll find 20,000 Kruger. It's not much, but it should be enough to bribe a few Stadwatch grunts. He knew their chances would be slim, and that it was his fault. You'd have a better shot on your own. Even better if you left now.
Inej narrowed her eyes.
I'm going to pretend you didn't say that. These are my friends. I'm not going anywhere.
Tell me about Dunyasha, he said.
She was carrying quality blades.
Inej took the shears from the table of the vanity and began cutting fresh strips of cloth from one of the towels.
I think she may be my shadow.
Pretty solid shadow if she can throw knives.
The Suli believe that when we do wrong, we give life to our shadows. Every sin makes the shadow stronger until eventually the shadow is stronger than you.
If that were true, my shadow would have put Ketterdam in permanent night.
Maybe, Inej said, turning her dark gaze to his. Or maybe you're someone else's shadow.
You mean Pekka?
What happens if you make it back from the slat? If the auction goes as planned and we manage this feat?
Then you get your ship and your future.
And you?
I wreak all the havoc I can until my luck runs out. I use our hall to build an empire.
And after that?
Who knows, maybe I'll burn it to the ground.
Is that what makes you different from Rollins? That you leave nothing behind?
I am not Pekka Rollins or his shadow. I don't sell girls into brothels. I don't con helpless kids out of their money.
Look at the floor of the Crow Club, Kaz. Her voice was gentle. Patient.
Why was it making him want to set fire to something?
Think of every racket and card game and theft you've run. Did all those men and women deserve what they got, or what they had taken from them?
Life isn't ever what we deserve, Inej.
If it were, did your brother get what he deserved?
No.
But the denial felt hollow.
Why had he called Jesper by Geordi's name?
When he looked into the past, he saw his brother through the eyes of the boy he'd been. Brave, brilliant, infallible, a knight bested by a dragon dressed like a merch. But how would he see Geordi now? As a mark? Another dumb pigeon looking for a shortcut? He leaned his hands on the edge of the sink. He wasn't angry anymore. He just felt weary.
We were fools.
You were children. Was there no one to protect you?
Was there anyone to protect you?
My father?
My mother?
They would have done anything to keep me from being stolen.
And they would have been mowed down by slavers.
Then I guess I was lucky I didn't have to see that. How could you still look at the world that way?
Sold into a brothel at age 14 and you count yourself lucky.
They loved me. They love me. I believe that.
He saw her draw closer in the mirror. Her black hair was an ink splash against the white tile walls. She paused behind him.
You protected me, Kaz.
The fact that you're bleeding through your bandages tells me otherwise.
She glanced down. A red blossom of blood had spread on the bandage tied around her shoulder. She tugged awkwardly at the strip of towel. I need Nina to fix this one.
He didn't mean to say it. He meant to let her go.
I can help you.
Her gaze snapped to his in the mirror.
Wary.
As if gauging an opponent.
I can help you.
They were the first words she'd spoken to him, standing in the parlor of the menagerie, draped in purple silk, eyes lined in coal. She had helped him, and she'd nearly destroyed him. Maybe he should let her finish the job.
Kaz could hear the drip of the faucet, water striking the basin in an uneven rhythm. He wasn't sure what he wanted her to say.
Tell her to get out, a voice inside him demanded.
Beg her to stay.
But Inej said nothing.
instead. She gathered the bandages and shears from the vanity and placed them beside the basin. Then she flattened her palms on the counter and effortlessly levered herself up so that she was seated on it. They were eye to eye now. He took a step closer and then just stood there, unable to move. He could not do this. The distance between them felt like nothing. It felt like miles. She reached for the shears, graceful as always, a girl underwater, and offered them to him handle first. They were cool in his hand, the metal unpliable and reassuring. He stepped into the space framed by her knees. "Where do we start?" she asked. The steam from the basin had curled the wisps of hair that framed her face. Was he going to do this? He nodded to her right forearm, not trusting himself to speak. His gloves lay on the other side of the basin, black against the gold-veined marble. They looked like dead animals. He focused on the shears. Cold metal in his hands, nothing like skin. He could not do this if his hands were shaking. "I can best this," he told himself. It was no different than drawing a weapon on someone. Violence was easy. He slid the blade carefully beneath the bandage on her arm. The towel was thicker than gauze would have been, but the shears were sharp. One snip and the bandage fell away, revealing a deep puncture wound. He cast the fabric aside. He picked up a strip of fresh towel and stood there, steeling himself. She lifted her arm. Cautiously, he looped the clean piece of cloth around her forearm. His knuckles brushed against her skin and lightning cracked through him, left him paralyzed, rooted to the earth. His heart should not be making that sound. Maybe he would never get to the slat. Maybe this would kill him. He willed his hands to move, knotted the bandage once, twice. It was done. Cass took a breath. He knew he should replace the bandage at her shoulder next, but he wasn't ready for that, so he nodded to her left arm. The bandage was perfectly clean and secure, but she didn't question him. Just offered her forearm. This time it was a little easier. He moved slowly, methodically. The shears, the bandage, a meditation. But then the task was complete. They said nothing. Caught in an eddy of silence. Not touching. Her knees on either side of him. Inej's eyes were wide and dark. Lost planets. Black moons. The bandage on her shoulder had been looped under her arm twice and tied near the joint. He leaned in slightly, but the angle was awkward. He couldn't simply wedge the scissors beneath the towel. He would have to lift the edge of the fabric. No. The room was too bright. His chest felt like a clenched fist. "Stop this." He pressed two fingers together. He slid them beneath the bandage. Everything in him recoiled. The water was cold against his legs. His body had gone numb, and yet he could still feel the wet give of his brother's rotting flesh beneath his hands. It's shame that eats men whole. He was drowning in it. Drowning in the Ketterdam harbor. His eyes blurred. "It isn't easy for me either." Her voice low and steady. The voice that had once led him back from hell. "Even now a boy will smile at me on the street. Or Jesper will put his arm around my waist, and I feel like I'm going to vanish." The room tilted. He clung to the tether of her voice. "I live in fear that I'll see one of her, one of my, clients on the street. For a long time I thought I recognized them everywhere. But sometimes I think what they did to me wasn't the worst of it." Kaz's vision came back into focus. The water receded. He was standing in a hotel bathroom. His fingers were pressed against Inez's shoulder. He could feel the fine muscles beneath her skin. A pulse beat furiously at her throat in the soft hollow just beneath her jaw. He realized she had closed her eyes. Her lashes were black against her cheeks. As if in response to his shaking, she had gone even more still. He should say something, but his mouth could not make words.
"Tante Helene wasn't always cruel,"
Inej continued.
"She'd hug you, hold you close, then pinch you so hard she broke skin. You never knew if a kiss was coming or a slap. One day you were her best girl, and the next day she'd bring you to her office and tell you she was selling you to a group of men she'd met on the street. She'd make you beg her to keep you."
Inez released a soft sound that was almost a laugh. The first time Nina hugged me, I flinched. Her eyes opened. She met his gaze. He could hear the drip of the faucet, see the curl of her braid over her shoulder where it had slipped free of its coil. "Go on," she said quietly, as if she was asking him to continue a story. He wasn't sure he could. But if she could speak those words into the echo of this room, he could damn well try. Carefully, he raised the shears. He lifted the bandage, creating a gap, feeling regret and release as he broke contact with her skin. He sliced through the bandage. He could feel the warmth of her on his fingers like fever. The ruined bandage fell away. He took up another long strip of towel in his right hand. He had to lean in to loop it behind her. He was so close now. His mind took in the shell of her ear, the hair tucked behind it, that rapid pulse fluttering in her throat. Alive. 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 It isn't easy for me, either. He looped the bandage around again, the barest touches, unavoidable. Shoulder, clavicle, once her knee. The water rose around him. He secured the knot. Step back. He did not step back. He stood there, hearing his own breath, hers, the rhythm of them alone in this room. The sickness was there, the need to run, the need for something else, too. Kaz thought he knew the language of pain intimately, but this ache was new. It hurt to stand here like this, so close to the circle of her arms. It isn't easy for me, either. After all she'd endured, he was the weak one. But she would never know what it was like for him to see Nina pull her close, watch Jesper loop his arm through hers, what it was to stand in doorways and against walls and know he could never draw near her. "But I'm here now," he thought wildly. He had carried her, fought beside her, spent whole nights next to her, both of them on their bellies, peering through a long glass, watching some warehouse or Murch's mansion. This was nothing like that. He was sick and frightened, his body slick with sweat, but he was here. He watched that pulse, the evidence of her heart, matching his own beat for anxious beat. He saw the damp curve of her neck, the gleam of her brown skin. He wanted. Before he even knew what he intended, he lowered his head. She drew in a sharp breath. His lips hovered just above the warm juncture between her shoulder and the column of her neck. He waited. "Tell me to stop. Push me away." She exhaled. "Go on," she repeated. "Finish the story." The barest movement, and his lips brushed her skin. Warm. Smooth. Beaded with moisture. Desire coursed through him. 1,000 images he'd hoarded. Barely let himself imagine. The fall of her dark hair freed from its braid. His hand fitted to the lithe curve of her waist, her lips parted, whispering his name. All of it there, and then gone. He was drowning in the harbor. Her limbs were a corpse's limbs. Her eyes were dead and staring. Disgust and longing roiled in his gut. He lurched backward, and pain shot through his bad leg. His mouth was on fire. The room swayed. He braced himself against the wall, trying to breathe. Inej was on her feet, moving toward him, her face concerned. He held up a stand to stop her. "Don't!" He stood in the center of the tile floor, framed by white and gold like a gilded icon. "What happened to you, Kaz? What happened to your brother?" "It doesn't matter. Tell me. Please." "Tell her," said a voice inside him. "Tell her everything." But he didn't know how or where to begin. And why should he? So she could find a way to absolve him of his crimes? He didn't want her pity. He didn't need to explain himself. He just needed to find a way to let her go. "You want to know what Pekka did to me?" His voice was a snarl, reverberating off the tiles. "How about I tell you what I did when I found the woman who pretended to be his wife? The girl who pretended to be his daughter? Or how about I tell you what happened to the boy who lured us in that first night with his mechanical toy dogs? That's a good one. His name was Philip. I found him running a Monty game on Kelstrat. I tortured him for 2 days and left him bleeding in an alley, the key to a wind-up dog shoved down his throat. Kaz saw Inej flinch. He ignored the sting in his heart. That's right, he went on. The clerks at the bank who turned over our information, the fake attorney, the man who gave me free hot chocolate at Herzun's fake office, I destroyed them all one by one, brick by brick, and Rollins will be the last. These things don't wash away with prayer, Wraith. There is no peace waiting for me, no forgiveness, not in this life, not in the next. Inej shook her head. How could she still look at him with kindness in her eyes? You don't ask for forgiveness, Kaz. You earn it. Is that what you intend to do? By hunting slavers? By hunting slavers. By rooting out the merchers and barrel bosses who profit off them. By being something more than just the next Pekka Rollins. It was impossible. There was nothing more. He could see the truth even if she couldn't. Inej was stronger than he would ever be. She'd kept her faith, her goodness, even when the world tried to take it from her with greedy hands. His eyes scanned her face as they always had, closely, hungrily, snatching at the details of her like the thief he was. The even set of her dark brows, the rich brown of her eyes, the upward tilt of her lips. He didn't deserve peace, and he didn't deserve forgiveness. But if he was going to die today, maybe the one thing he'd earned was the memory of her, brighter than anything he would ever have a right to take with him to the other side. Kaz strode past Inej, took his discarded gloves from the sink, pulled them on. He shrugged into his coat, straightened his tie in the mirror, tucked his cane under his arm. He might as well go to meet his death in style. When he turned back to her, he was ready. Whatever happens to me, survive this city. Get your ship. Have your vengeance, carve your name into their bones, but survive this mess I've gotten us into. Don't do this, Inej said. If I don't, it's all over. There's no way out, there's no reward, there's nothing left. Nothing. She repeated. Look for Dunyasha's tells. What? A fighter always has a tell. The sign of an old injury, a dropped shoulder when they're about to throw a punch. Do I have a tell? You square your shoulders before you start a move as if you're about to perform. Like you're waiting for the audience's attention. She looked slightly affronted at that. And what's yours? Kaz thought of the moment on Velgaluk that had nearly cost him everything. I'm a cripple. That's my tell. No one's ever smart enough to look for the others. Don't go to the slack, Kaz. Let us find another way. Step aside, Wraith. Kaz, if you ever cared about me at all... Don't. Follow. He pushed past her and strode from the room. He couldn't think of what might be, of what there was to lose. And Inej was wrong about one thing. He knew exactly what he intended to leave behind when he was gone. Damage.
27. Inej. She followed him anyway. If you ever cared about me at all. Inej actually snorted as she vaulted over a chimney. It was offensive. She'd had numerous chances to be free of Kaz, and she'd never taken them. So he wasn't fit for a normal life. Was she meant to find a kind-hearted husband, have his children, then sharpen her knives after they'd gone to sleep? How would she explain the nightmares she still had from the menagerie? Or the blood on her hands? She could feel the press of Kaz's fingers against her skin. Feel the bird's wing brush of his mouth against her neck. See his dilated eyes. Two of the deadliest people the barrel had to offer, and they could barely touch each other without both of them keeling over. But they tried. He'd tried. Maybe they could try again. A foolish wish, the sentimental hope of a girl who hadn't had the firsts of her life stolen, who hadn't ever felt Tanta Helene's lash, who wasn't covered in wounds and wanted by the law. Kaz would have laughed at her optimism. She thought of Dunyasha, her shadow. What dreams did she have? A throne, as Matthias had suggested? Another kill offered up to her god? Inej had no doubts she would meet the Ivory and Amber girl again. She wanted to believe she would emerge victorious when that time came, but she could not argue with Dunyasha's gifts. Maybe she really was a princess. a girl of noble birth trained in the killing arts, destined for greatness like a heroine in a story. Then what did that make Inej? An obstacle in her path? Tribute on the altar of death? A smudge of a Suli acrobat who fights like a common street thug? Or perhaps her saints had brought Dunyasha to these streets?
Who will remember a girl like you, Miss Gaffar?
Maybe this was the way Inej would be called to account for the lives she had taken. Maybe. But not yet. She still had debts to pay. Inej hissed as she slid down a drain pipe, feeling the bandage around her thigh pull free. She was going to leave a trail of blood over the skyline. They were drawing closer to the slat, but she kept to the shadows and made sure there was a good distance between her and Kaz. He had a way of sensing her presence when no one else could. He paused frequently, unaware he was being observed. His leg was troubling him worse than he'd let on. But she would not interfere at the slat. She could abide by his wishes in that, at least, because he was right. In the barrel, strength was the only currency that mattered. If Kaz didn't face this challenge alone, he could lose everything. Not just the chance to garner support from the dregs, but any chance he would ever have to walk the barrel freely again. She'd often wished to chip away a bit of his arrogance, but she couldn't bear the idea of seeing Kaz stripped of his pride. He dodged over the rooftops of Gronstraat, following the route they'd laid out together, and soon enough the back of the slat came into view, narrow, leaning lopsided against its neighbors. Its shingled gables black with soot. How many times had she approached the slat from just this angle? To her, it was the way home. She'd spotted Kaz's window on the top floor. She'd spent countless hours perched on that sill, feeding the crows that gathered there, listening to him scheme. Below it, slightly to the left, she spotted the sliver of window that belonged to her own tiny bedroom. It struck her that, whether the auction succeeded or failed, this might be the last time she ever returned to the slat. She might never see Kaz seated at his desk again, or hear the thump of his cane coming up the slat's rickety steps, letting her know from its rhythm whether it had been a bad night or a good one. She watched him crawl awkwardly down from the lip of the roof and pick the lock on his own window. Once he was out of sight, she continued over the steep pitch of the gable to the other side of the slat. She couldn't follow the way he'd gone without giving herself away. On the front of the house, just below the roofline, she found the old metal hook used for hauling up heavy cargo. She grabbed it, ignoring the disgruntled warbling of startled pigeons, and nudged open the window with her foot, wrinkling her nose at the stink of the bird droppings. She slipped inside, moving across the roof beams, and found a place among the shadows. Then she waited, unsure of what to do next. If anyone looked up, they might see her there, perched in the corner like the spider she was. But why would anyone think to? Below, the entryway buzzed with activity. Apparently, the festive mood of that morning's parade had suffused the day. People came in and out the front door, shouting to one another, laughing and singing. A few dregs sat on the squeaky wooden staircase, passing a bottle of whiskey back and forth. Seeger, one of Per Haskell's favorite bruisers, kept blowing the same three notes on a tin whistle for all he was worth. A group of rowdies burst through the door and tumbled into the entry, cawing and screeching like fools, stomping the floor, banging into one another like a school of hungry sharks. They carried axe handles studded with rusty nails, cudgels, knives and guns, and some of them had painted crow's wings in black across their wild eyes. Behind them, Inej glimpsed a few dregs who didn't seem to share the excitement. Annika, with her crop of yellow hair, wiry Roder, who Per Haskell had suggested Kaz use as his spider, the bigger bruisers, Keeg and Pim. They hung back against the wall, exchanging unhappy looks as the others whooped and postured. They're Kaz's best hope for support, she thought. The youngest members of the dregs. The kids Kaz had brought in and organized, the ones who worked the hardest and who took the worst jobs because they were the newest. But what exactly did Kaz have in mind? Had he entered his office for a reason or simply because it was the easiest point of access from the roof? Did he mean to speak to Per Haskell alone? The entirety of the staircase was exposed to the entryway. Kaz couldn't even start down it without attracting everyone's notice, unless he planned to do it in disguise. And how he would negotiate the stairs on his bad leg without anyone recognizing his gait, was beyond her. A cheer went up from the people gathered below. Tarhaskal had emerged from his office, gray head moving through the crowd. He was dressed in high flash for the festivities today, crimson and silver checked vest, houndstooth trousers. Out and about as the Lord of the Dregs, the gang Kaz had built up from practically nothing. With one hand, he was waving around the plumed hat he favored so much, and in the other, he carried a walking stick. Someone had secured a cartoonish papier-mâché crow atop it. It made her sick. Kaz had been better than a son to Haskell. A devious, ruthless, murdering son, but even so. "Think we'll land him tonight, old man?" asked Bastion, tipping a nasty-looking cudgel against his leg. Haskell lifted the walking stick like a scepter.
"If anyone's gonna get that reward, it's one of my lads, isn't that right?"
They cheered.
"Old man."
Inez's head snapped up as Kaz's rock-salt rasp cut through the noise of the crowd, silencing the rowdy chatter. Every eye turned upward. He stood at the top of the stairs, looking down four flights of rickety wood. She realized he'd stopped to change his coat, and it clung to him in perfectly tailored lines. He stood leaning on his cane, hair neatly pushed back from his pale brow, a black glass boy of deadly edges. The look of surprise on Haskell's face was nearly comical. Then he started to laugh.
"Well, I'll be a son of a bitch, Pricker. You have to be the craziest bastard I ever met. I'll take that as a compliment. Shouldn't have come here, unless it's to turn yourself in like the smart lad I know you to be. I'm through making you money."
Per Haskell's face crumpled in rage.
"You ignorant little skiv," he roared, "waltzing in here like some merch at his manor. You was always acting like you're better than us, Brecker,"
shouted Seeger, still holding the tin whistle, and a few of the other dregs nodded. Per Haskell clapped his hands in encouragement. And it was true. Kaz had always kept himself at a remove from everyone. They'd wanted camaraderie, friendship. But he had never agreed to play their game, only his own. Maybe this reckoning was inevitable. Inej knew Kaz hadn't intended to remain Per Haskell's lieutenant forever. Their triumph at the Ice Court should have made him king of the barrel, but Vanek had robbed him of that. The dregs didn't know the extraordinary things he'd achieved in the last few weeks, the prize he'd wrested from the Fjerdens, or the haul that might still be within his grasp. He faced them alone, a boy with few allies, a stranger to most of them, despite his brutal reputation.
"You've got no friends here," shouted Bastion.
Along the wall, Annika and the others bristled. Pim shook his shaggy head and crossed his arms. Kaz lifted one shoulder in the barest shrug.
"I didn't come looking for friends. And I'm not here for the washed-up catchers and cowards. Or the losers who think the barrel owes them something for managing to stay alive. I came for the killers. The hard ones. The hungry ones. The people like me. This is my gang,"
Kaz said, starting down the stairs, cane thumping against the boards.
"And I'm done taking orders." "Go get your reward, lads," Haskell shouted.
There was a brief pause, and for a moment Inej hoped that no one would listen, that they'd simply mutiny against Haskell. Then the floodgates opened. Bastion and Seeger were the first to rush the stairs, eager to get their shot at Dirty Hands. But Seeger was slow from the whiskey, and by the time they'd reached Kaz on the third flight of stairs, they were out of breath. Kaz's cane whipped out in two slashing arcs, shattering the bones in Seeger's arms. Instead of engaging Bastion, he slipped past him, uncannily fast despite his bad leg. Before Bastion could turn, Kaz jabbed his cane into the soft space between Bastion's thigh and his knee. He crumpled with a strangled cry. Another of Haskell's lackeys was already rushing to meet him, a bruiser called Teapot for the way he whistled through his nose when he breathed. A blow from Teapot's bat glanced off Kaz's shoulder as he bobbed left. He swung his cane and struck the bruiser directly in the jaw with the full weight of the crow's head. Inej saw what had to be teeth fly from Teapot's mouth. Kaz still had the high ground, but he was outnumbered, and now they came in waves. Varian and Swan rushed the third-floor landing, Red Felix on their heels, Milo and Gorka hovering close behind. Inej clamped her lips together as Kaz took a hit to his bad leg, faltered, barely righted himself in time to dodge a blow from Varian's chain. It smashed into the banister inches from Kaz's head, sending splinters of wood flying. Kaz grabbed the chain and used Varian's momentum to send him hurtling over the broken banister. The crowd surged backward as he struck the entry floor. Swan and Red Felix came at Kaz from both sides. Red Felix grabbed Kaz's coat, yanking him backward. Kaz slipped free like a magician escaping a straitjacket in a show on East Stave. Swan swung his spiked axe wildly, and Kaz slammed the head of his cane into the side of Swan's face. Even from a distance, Inej saw his cheekbone collapse in a bloody crater. Red Felix pulled a sap from his pocket and batted hard at Kaz's right hand. The blow was sloppy, but Kaz's cane clattered to the floor, rolling down the stairs. Beetle, lean as a ferret and with the face of one too, scampered up the steps and seized it, tossing it to Per Haskell as his cronies gave a cheer. Kaz planted his hands on either side of the banister and jammed his boots into Red Felix's chest, sending him tumbling backward down the stairs. Kaz's cane was gone. He spread his gloved hands wide. Again, Inej thought of a magician. Nothing up my sleeves. Three more dregs leapt past Red Felix and converged on him. Milo, Gorka, Reedy Beetle with his odd little face and oily hair. Inej dared to blink. And Milo had Kaz against the wall, raining blows against his ribs and face. Kaz wrenched back his head and butted his forehead into Milo's with a sickening crunch. Milo took a woozy step, and Kaz pressed the advantage. But there were too many of them, and Kaz was fighting with his fists alone now, blood pouring down one side of his face, lips split, left eye swelling shut. His movements were slowing. Gorka hooked an arm around Kaz's throat. Kaz drove an elbow into Gorka's stomach and broke free. He lurched forward, and Beetle grabbed his shoulder, slamming his cudgel into Kaz's gut. Kaz doubled over, spitting blood. Gorka struck the side of Kaz's head with a thick loop of chain. Inej saw Kaz's eyes roll up in his head. He swayed, and then he was on the ground. The crowd in the entry roared. Inej was moving before she thought of it. She couldn't just watch him die. She wouldn't. They had him down now, heavy boots kicking and stomping at his body. Her knives were in her hands. She'd kill them all. She'd pile the bodies to the rafters for the Stodwatch to find. But in that moment, through the wide slats in the banister landing, she saw his eyes were open. His gaze found hers. He'd known she was there all along. Of course he had. He always knew how to find her. He gave the barest shake of his bloodied head. She wanted to scream, "To hell with your pride, with the dregs, with this whole wretched city!" Kaz tried to rise. Beetle kicked him back down. They were laughing now. Gorka raised his leg, balancing his big boot above Kaz's skull, playing to the crowd. Inej saw Pim turn away. Annika and Keeg were bellowing for someone to stop them. Gorka brought his foot down and screamed a high-pitched, bobbling squeal. Kaz was holding Gorka's boot, and Gorka's foot was wrenched to the side at an ugly angle. He hopped on one leg, trying to keep his balance, that strange shrill wail bleeding from his mouth in time with his hops. Milo and Beetle kicked Kaz hard in the ribs, but Kaz didn't flinch. With a strength Inej couldn't fathom, Kaz jammed Gorka's leg upward. The big man shrieked as his knee popped free of its socket. He toppled sideways, blubbering. "My leg! My leg!" "I recommend a cane," Kaz said. But all Inej could see was the knife in Milo's hands, long and gleaming. It looked like the cleanest thing about him.
"Don't kill him, you podge!"
Haskell bellowed, no doubt still thinking of the reward. But Milo was apparently beyond listening. He raised the knife and plunged it directly at Kaz's chest. At the last second, Kaz rolled. The knife sank into the floorboards with a loud thunk. Milo grabbed the knife to pry it free, but Kaz was already moving, and Inej saw he had two rusty nails tucked between his fingers, like claws. He'd somehow plucked them from one of the axe handles. He shot upward and jabbed the nails into Milo's throat, embedding them in his windpipe. Milo made a faint, choked whistle before he fell. Kaz used the banister to haul himself to his feet. Beetle held his hands up as if forgetting he was still in possession of a cudgel, and Kaz was unarmed. Kaz grabbed a fistful of Beetle's hair, yanked back his head, and cracked it against the banister. The sound like a gunshot. The recoil sharp enough that Beetle's head bounced off the wood like a rubber ball. He slumped in a ferrety little pile. Kaz wiped a sleeve across his face, smearing blood over his nose and forehead, and spat. He adjusted his gloves, looked down at Per Haskell from the second-story landing, and smiled. His teeth were red and wet. The crowd was far larger than when the fight had begun. He rolled his shoulders. "Who's next?" he asked, as if he might have an appointment elsewhere. "Who's coming?" Inej didn't know how he could keep his voice so steady. "This is what I do all day long. I fight. When was the last time you saw Per Haskell take a punch? Lead a job? Hell, when was the last time you saw him out of his bed before noon? You think we're going to applaud because you can take a beating?" Per Haskell sneered. "It don't make up for the trouble you've caused. Bringing the law down on the barrel. Kidnapping a merchant's son. I told you, I had no part in that," Kaz said. "Pekka Rollins says otherwise. Good to know you take a dime lion's word over one of your own."
An uneasy murmur passed through the crowd below, like a wind rustling the leaves. Your gang was your family, the bond strong as blood.
"You're crazy enough to cross a merch breaker."
"Crazy enough," conceded Kaz.
"But not stupid enough."
Now some of the dregs were muttering to one another, as if they'd never considered Vanek might have trumped up the charges. Of course they hadn't. Vanek was quality. Why would an upright mercher make such a charge against some canal rat if it wasn't true? And after all, Kaz had gone to great lengths to provide he was capable of anything.
"You were seen on Godmid Bridge with the mercher's wife," insisted Per Haskell. "His wife, not his son. His wife, who is home safe, beside her thieving husband, knitting booties and talking to her birds. Think for a minute, Haskell. What possible use could I have for a merch's brat? Bribery? Ransom? I crossed Vanek because he crossed me. And now he's using the city's henchmen and Pekka Rollins, and all of you, to even the score. It's that simple."
"I didn't ask for this trouble, boy. Didn't ask for it and don't want it. You wanted everything else I've brought to your door, Haskell. You'd still be running the same penny poor cons and drinking watered-down whiskey if it wasn't for me. These walls would be falling down around your head. You've taken every bit of money and luck I've handed you. You ate up the profits from Fifth Harbor and the Crow Club like it was your due. Let me do your fighting and your dirty work."
His gaze tracked slowly over the dregs below.
"You all benefited. You reaped the rewards. But first chance you get, you're ready to cozy up to Pekka Rollins for the pleasure of fitting me for a noose."
Another uneasy rustle from the onlookers.
"But I'm not angry."
There had to be 20 dregs looking up at Kaz, all of them armed, and yet Inej could have sworn she sensed their relief. Then she understood. The fight was just the opening act. They knew Kaz was tough. They didn't need him to prove it. This was about what Kaz needed. To attempt a coup against Per Haskell, he would have had to seek out the dregs individually, wasting time and risking capture on the streets of the barrel. Now he had an audience. And Per Haskell had been happy to welcome one and all, a bit of entertainment, the dramatic end of Kaz Brekker, the humbling of Dirty Hands. But this was no cheap comedy. It was a bloody rite. And Per Haskell had let the congregation gather, never realizing that the real performance had yet to begin. Kaz stood upon his pulpit, wounded, bruised, and ready to preach. "I'm not angry," Kaz said again. "Not about that. But you know what makes me mad? What really gets me riled? Seeing a crow taking orders from a dime lion. Watching you parade around after Pecker Rollins like it's something to be proud of. One of the deadliest gangs in the barrel. Bending like a bunch of new lilies." "Rollins has power, boy," said Per Haskell. "Resources. Lecture me when you've been around a few more years. It's my job to protect this gang, and that's what I did. I kept them safe from your recklessness. You think you're safe? Because you rolled over for Pecker Rollins? You think he'll be happy to honor this truce? That he won't get hungry for what you've got? Does that sound like Pecker Rollins to you?"
"Hell no," said Annika.
"Who do you want standing in that doorway when the lion gets hungry? A crow? Or a washed-up rooster who squawks and struts and sides with a dime lion and some dirty merch against one of his own?"
From above, Inej could see the people nearest Per Haskell leaning slightly away from him now. A few were taking long looks at him, at the feather in his hat, at the walking sticks in his hands. Kaz's cane, that they'd seen wielded with such bloody precision, and the fake crow cane Haskell had contrived to mock him.
"In the barrel, we don't trade in safety," Kaz said, the abraded burn of his voice carrying over the crowd. "There's only strength and weakness. You don't ask for respect. You earn it. You don't ask for forgiveness. You earn it."
He'd stolen her line. She almost smiled.
"I'm not your friend," he said. "I'm not your father. I'm not going to offer you whiskey or clap you on the back and call you son. But I'll keep money in our coffers. I'll keep our enemies scared enough that they'll scurry when they see that tattoo on your arm. So who do you want in that doorway when Pecker Rollins comes to call?"
The silence swelled. A tick feeding on the prospect of violence.
"Well?"
Per Haskell blustered, thrusting his chest out.
"Answer him. You want your rightful leader, or some jumped-up cripple who can't even walk straight?" "I may not walk straight," said Kaz, "but at least I don't run from a fight."
He started down the steps. Varian had risen from the floor after his fall. Though he didn't look entirely steady on his feet, he moved toward the stairs, and Inej had to respect his loyalty to Haskell. Pim pushed off from the wall and blocked Varian's path.
"You're through," he said. "Get Rollins' men,"
Per Haskell commanded Varian.
"Raise the alarm."
But Annika drew a long knife and stepped in front of the entry door.
"You a dime lion?" she asked. "Or are you dregs?"
Slowly, his limp pronounced but his back straight, Kaz made his way down the final flight of stairs, leaning heavily on the banister. When he reached the bottom, the remaining crowd parted. Haskell's grizzled face was red with fear and indignation.
"You'll never last, boy. Takes more than what you got to get past Pecker Rollins."
Kaz snatched his cane from Per Haskell's hand.
"You have 2 minutes to get out of my house, old man. This city's price is blood," said Kaz. "And I'm happy to pay with yours."
28. Jesper. Jesper had never seen Kaz so bloodied and banged up. Broken nose. Split lip. One eye swollen shut. He was clutching his side in a way that made Jesper think at least one of his ribs was broken. And when he coughed into a handkerchief, Jesper saw blood on the white fabric before Kaz shoved it back into his pocket. His limp was worse than ever, but he was still standing, and Annika and Pim were with him. Apparently, they'd left a heavily armed skeleton crew at the sled, in case Pekka got word of Kaz's coup and decided to try to make a territory grab.
All saints, Jesper said. So I guess that went well.
About as well as expected. Matthias shook his head in something between admiration and disbelief.
How many lives do you have, Dimjin?
One more, I hope. Kaz had wriggled out of his coat and managed to yank off his shirt, leaning on the sink in the bathroom.
For saints' sake, let us help you, said Nina.
Kaz gripped the edge of a bandage in his teeth and tore off a piece.
I don't need your help. Keep working with Colm.
What is wrong with him? Nina grumbled as they went back to the sitting room to drill Colm on his cover story.
Same thing that's always wrong with him, said Jesper. He's Kaz Brekker.
A little more than an hour later, Inej had slipped into the room and handed Kaz a note. It was late afternoon, and the windows of the suite were ablaze with buttery gold light.
Are they coming?
Asked Nina. Inej nodded. I gave your letter to the guard at the door, and it did the trick. They brought me directly to two members of the Triumvirate.
Who did you meet with? Said Kaz.
Jinya Safin and Zoya Nazjalinsky. Wyland sat forward.
The tailor? She's at the embassy?
Kaz raised a brow.
What an interesting fact to forget to mention, Nina.
It wasn't relevant at the time.
Of course it's relevant,
Wyland said angrily. Jesper was a little surprised. Wyland hadn't seemed to mind wearing Kuei's features at first. He'd almost seemed to welcome the distance it gave him from his father. But that had been before they'd gone to St. Hilda, and before Jesper had kissed Kuei. Nina winced slightly.
Wyland, I thought you were coming to Ravka.
You would have been able to meet Jinya as soon as we were on the boat.
We all know where Nina's loyalties lie, said Kaz.
I didn't tell the Triumvirate about Kuei.
A faint smile touched Kaz's lips.
Like I said, he turned to Inej. Did you state our terms?
Yes. They'll be at the hotel baths in an hour. I told them to make sure no one saw them enter.
Let's hope they can handle it, said Kaz.
They can run a country, said Nina. They can manage a few simple instructions.
Is it safe for them on the streets?
Asked Wylan.
They're probably the only Grisha safe in Ketterdam, said Kaz.
Even if the Shu are working up the nerve to start hunting again, they aren't going to start with two highly placed Ravkin dignitaries. Nina, does Jinya have the skill to restore Wyland's features?
I don't know, said Nina.
She's called the First Tailor, and she's certainly the most gifted, but without Purim.
She didn't have to explain.
Purim was the only reason Nina had been able to manage Wyland's miraculous transformation into Kuei.
Still, Jinya Safin was a legend. Anything might still be possible.
Kaz,
Wyland said, twisting the tail of his shirt.
If she's willing to try.
Kaz nodded. But you're going to have to be twice as careful until the auction. Your father doesn't want you showing up to skunk the scam he's pulling on the Merchant Council and the Stadwatch. You'd be smarter waiting.
No,
said Wyland.
I'm done being someone else,
Kaz shrugged. But Jesper had the feeling he was getting exactly what he wanted. At least in this case, it was what Wyland wanted, too.
Won't there be hotel guests at the baths?
Jesper asked.
I had them reserve the whole place for Mr. Rietveld, said Nina.
He's very self-conscious about disrobing in front of others.
Jesper groaned. Please don't talk about my father taking his clothes off.
It's his webbed feet, said Nina.
So embarrassing.
Nina and Matthias will stay here.
I should be there,
Nina protested. Are you Ravgan or a member of this crew? I'm both. Exactly. This conversation is going to be tricky enough without you and Matthias there to muddy it up. Though they went back and forth for a while, eventually Nina agreed to remain behind if Inej went in her stead. But Inej only shook her head. I prefer not to. Why? Nina asked. Someone needs to hold Kaz accountable. And you think I can? We should at least try. I love you, Nina. But the Ravkin government hasn't treated the Suli very well. I'm not interested in exchanging pleasantries with their leaders. Jesper had never really considered that. And it was clear from the stricken expression on Nina's face that she hadn't either. Inej gave her a tight hug. Come on, she said. We'll get Calm to order us something decadent. That's your answer for everything. You're complaining? Inej asked. I'm stating one of the reasons I adore you. They went to find Calm arm in arm, but Nina's teeth were worrying her lower lip. She had to be used to Matthias criticizing her country, but Jesper guessed it stung more coming from Inej. He wanted to tell Nina that you could love something and still see its flaws. At least he hoped that was true, or he was truly cooked. As they split to prepare for the meeting with the Ravkins, Jesper followed Wyland down the hall. Hey, Wyland kept going. Jesper jogged past him and cut off his path, walking backward.
Listen, this thing with Kuwait isn't a thing, he tried again. There is no thing with Kuwait.
You don't owe me an explanation. I'm the one who interrupted.
No, you didn't. Kuwait was sitting at the piano. It was an understandable mistake.
Wyland stopped short. You thought he was me?
Yes, Jesper said. See? Just a big mis-
Wyland's gold eyes flashed. You really can't tell us apart?
I mean, usually I can, but-
We're nothing alike, Wyland said indignantly. He's not even that good at science. Half his notebooks are full of doodles, mostly of you, and those aren't good either.
Really? Doodles of me?
Wyland rolled his eyes. Forget it. You can kiss whomever you like, Jesper.
And I do, as regularly as possible.
So what's the problem?
No problem. I just wanted to give you this.
He placed a tiny oval canvas in Wyland's hand.
I took it when we were at St. Hilda. I thought it might come in handy if Jinya's going to try to put you back to your old merchling self.
Wyland stared down at the canvas.
My mother painted this? It was in that room full of her art.
It was small, unframed, suitable only for a miniature. A portrait of Wyland as a child of around 8 years. Wyland curled his fingers over the edge of the painting. It's how she remembers me. She never got to see me grow up. He frowned. It's so old. I don't know if it will be useful.
It's still you, said Jesper. Same curls. Same worried little divot between the brows.
And you took this just because you thought it might come in handy?
I told you. I like your stupid face.
Wyland ducked his head and slipped the portrait into his pocket. Thank you.
Sure. Jesper hesitated. If you're headed down to the baths, I could come with you, if you wanted.
Wyland nodded anxiously. I like that. Jesper's newly buoyant mood lasted all the way to the lift. But as they joined Kaz and descended to the hotel's third floor, his nerves started to jangle. They might be walking into a trap, and Kaz wasn't exactly in fighting form. Some part of Jesper hoped that the Ravkins would say no to this mad plan. Then Kaz would be stymied. And even if they all ended up in Hellgate or swinging from the gallows, his father would at least have a chance to escape unharmed. Calm had spent hours with Nina and Kaz trying to learn his role, running through different scenarios, enduring their endless questions and prodding without complaint. Calm wasn't much of an actor, and he lied about as well as Jesper danced ballet, but
Nina would be with him. That had to count for something. The lift opened, and they entered another vast purple and white hallway. Then followed the sound of running water to a room with a large circular pool at its center, surrounded by a colonnade of arches. Through them,